Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Dr. Ilka Fulmer is an associate professor of computer science at the University of Nevada, Reno. Dr. Fulmer's research focuses on evaluating, building, and designing technology to address high-impact social problems. The problems pertain to the well-being, health, real-world accessibility, and assistive technology for people with disabilities. Dr. Fulmer focuses some of his research on technology for the blind and visually impaired. Some of the technology includes a haptic interface for non-visual steering, an upper body tactile audio exergame, and Guitar Hero for the visually impaired. Dr. Fulmer joins us to talk about these technologies that help the blind live happy and healthy lives, and even a little bit about himself. Dr. Fulmer, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So let's cover some of your work experience. Your curricula vitae says that you started teaching in the Department of Computer Science at UNR in 2006. You were the assistant professor from 2006 to 2012. How did you get the teaching job at UNR?
Well, so I'm originally from the Netherlands. And after I did my PhD in the Netherlands, my advisor kind of hooked me up with a postdoc position at University of Alberta in Edmonton. And that was like my first, I traveled to the U.S. before, but it was my first, like, you know, living in North America. And I really loved living in Canada. It was just a great experience and great people. And up in Canada, it's beautiful up there. So I kind of fell in love with North America, and I was like, well, I got to go stay here, and that was the only position for a year. So I decided to apply to some positions in the U.S., and I really didn't have a clue where I wanted to end up. But I found a position at UNR, and I had an interview here, and they basically gave me a rental car, and I said, well, why don't you drive up to the lake? And I was like, which lake? It's like, oh, Lake Tahoe. I was like, okay, drive up there, and it was just an amazing experience and beautiful, and I immediately fell in love with the Sierras, and I'm still here, and I love it here. It's a great place to live. Reno is a really nice town, and it's been really changing the last 5 to 10 years. So it's been very great to live here.
That's why they call Reno the biggest little city in the world for nothing.
Exactly.
So you became an associate professor in 2012. You went from being an assistant to an associate professor. How did you get promoted?
Well, so when you apply for a professorship, you kind of, it's something called a 10-year track, and you basically, they test you out for 6 years, and then after 6 years, they look at your resume and see, you know, how much funding did you get, how many people did you graduate, how many courses did you teach, what are your student evaluations. So they basically create, like, you know, a resume, and then they send it out to a bunch of researchers in the U.S., and they'll ask them, like, you know, should this person get tenure at UNR? And tenure basically means that, you know, basically get a job for life. So as soon as you get promoted to associate, you know, you basically are tenured, and they can't get rid of you anymore.
No, they can keep you forever.
They can keep you forever. I don't know if it's a curse or a blessing, but.
So you teach two computer science classes, Design Patterns and Foundations of Game Design. What do you cover in these two classes?
So actually, I teach, those are like my main course, but I also teach a bunch of other courses. But the Design Patterns course is kind of like a software engineering course where we teach students better ways to program. It's a little bit more dealing with building larger software systems and how do you, you know, design the software so you can easily modify and extend it. I've been teaching that course for a couple of years now. So I have a background in software engineering, but my current research is in human-computer interaction, basically dealing with accessibility and assistive technology. The foundations of game design, I kind of started, together with a colleague, we kind of started the games area here, very popular with the students. Students really like to develop games. So I'm kind of teaching the introductory course to game design where, you know, we go over, you know, what kind of different games are there, and the students will develop a lot of games, and we're really focusing on developing, like, really unique games, and some of those games, we also try to make, like, games for people that are visually impaired, so games using audio or haptic feedback. So that's what I basically teach in those two courses.
One of your video games that you have for the visually impaired, I saw this a story on this on Fox 11 Reno, that you helped develop Guitar Hero for the visually impaired. How does that work?
Well, it was basically, I had a bunch of students, and, you know, we were looking at, like, you know, what area are we going to do research in, and then I kind of got a little bit nuts in the direction of, you know, video game accessibility, because there wasn't really much work in it, and I know a couple of people that are visually impaired and really like to play games. So we're like, well, why don't we try to make, you know, kind of like, because there are games for people with visual impairments, but they're very simple, and, you know, I was like, why don't we just take, like, you know, popular games like, you know, Guitar Hero and make that accessible, and then my students were like, oh, no, that's way too hard to make accessible. We're like, no, why don't we just try this and this? And so we kind of ended up developing, you know, an accessible version of Guitar Hero. And, yeah, I got a lot of media publicity with it. And that was really cool. And, you know, it was my first kind of a venture in using, like, haptic feedback to play games. Because a lot of the games that are available to blind people are using audio. And this is kind of a game where haptic feedback would work better because, you know, there was already, this is like a music-based game. So if you use audio cues or something to indicate what note to press, then that wouldn't really work. So we kind of explored like haptic feedback, and then we used the haptic feedback for a couple of other games as well.
There's also another technological development called the Blind Driver Challenge, steering using haptic cues. What are these cues?
Okay, so this is another thing. I think about 10 years ago, the Jernigan Research Institute, which is a part of the NFB, National Federation of Blind, they did this challenge, and they said, like, you know, autonomous vehicles have, you know, great potential for blind people. And if you, you know, Google driverless car, it could significantly improve the lives of blind people. But current legislation doesn't allow blind people to use an autonomous vehicle because you have to be a legal driver has to be in a vehicle. So because we were not sure, you know, how legislation pertaining autonomous vehicles will change in the future, we were like, well, what if we try to figure out how blind people can actually drive a car? Now, we were not the first, like I think something like 5 years ago, some team from Virginia Tech modified one of their autonomous vehicles and had a blind person drive it, but that was kind of like on a racetrack. And we were very interested to figure out, you know, what is the accuracy that a blind person could steer a vehicle on a track. But if you drive in real life, you know, you have to stay within your lane. So we were trying to figure out, can we determine what accuracy a blind person can steer? And we also, developed like a haptic steering wheel where you basically have haptic cues. And the way our interface works is kind of inspired by rumble strips. So if you drive over rumble strips, you feel like a very strong vibration on one side of the road, and you immediately steer away from, you know, where, the side of the vehicle where you felt the vibrations from. So we kind of built a haptic interface that does exactly that. So you'd be driving on the road, and as soon as you start leaving the road or start, like, going over the side of your lane, you feel haptic feedback on one side, and you start to correct, you know, you steer away from the haptic feedback. And so we evaluated this interface also with blind people, and we didn't, you know, we don't have access to a real autonomous vehicle, so we limited our experiments to a simulator. We did use kind of like a very realistic driving simulator with real physics and everything. So we just had a bunch of blind people come to our lab and, you know, have them drive our, you know, virtual vehicle, and we measured the accuracy with which they could stay on their in their lane. And I think, I don't have the data off the top of my head, but I think we had something like some sort of a deviation from the lane median. I think it was something like 1.5 meters, which is something like 4 feet. But that was actually small enough to actually allow a person to stay in their lane. So, a very exciting project, and I also presented that recently at the ACM Assets Conference in Rochester, and I think it was also well received. And so we're, you know, it's one of the examples of, like, you know, real world accessibility. A lot of the accessibility research deals with things like screen readers or, you know, helping blind people read emails, and that's very interesting and it's very rewarding. But I'm a little bit more interested in trying to find out, like, you know, real world accessibility dealing with, you know, how can we let a blind person drive a car, or how can we, you know, let them navigate or an indoor space. Or how can we, you know, improve their health by having them play a video game? I'm a little bit more interested in those research questions.
There's also SimViz. That's the simulation of visual impairments using a wearable see-through display. How would this display work?
Well, So that's one thing that I a lot of people ask me, like, oh, you know, as a blind person, can they not see anything? Well, you know, if you're totally blind, then, you know, obviously you can't see anything. But, you know, not everybody is totally blind, and there's, you know, a wide range of visual impairments. So because I get that question a lot, I was like, well, why don't, you know, how can we get blind, how can we develop a better understanding of what a blind person or a visually impaired person sees? So last year, before I went to Google, I spent some time in Australia at the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. And one of the things I was able to play with there was it's called an immersive headset called the Oculus Rift. And it's basically kind of like a kind of a smartphone display that you put in front of your eyes, and you put some lenses in it, and then you can do stereoscopic vision. And it does head tracking, so it changes what you see. It's an incredible technology. But then I got the idea of, like, hey, what if you just put a camera in front of the head-mounted display and you feed the camera feedback into the display? So you kind of create like an augmented reality solution. So I had one of my students build that, and then we were like, oh, that's really cool. You know, now we can basically, you know, you see the real world, but then, you know, you can modulate it. So the first thing we implemented was basically just kind of like, you know, colorblindness, or the different types of colorblindness, protanopia, deuteranopia. And then we did like cataracts and glaucoma, so you have like a central blur and a peripheral blur, and diabetic retinopathy, all sorts of spots, and I forgot what the last one is. But, you know, we tried it out, and it was like, wow, that's really interesting. So, you know, we can provide a better, you know, if people put on the headset, they can provide, we can provide them a better understanding of what it is to live with a visual impairment. So this has various applications potentially. So it could be used as an education tool for teachers or for ophthalmology students, or you know, you could use it to do some simple accessibility testing. So let's say you developed a really cool app, like a video game, and you want to figure out if someone with a colorblindness can see it. So, you know, you would use their headset, and then you select the colorblindness, and then you look at your screen like, oh, hey, you know, I'm not able to see the different colored jewels or something. So this could, you know, it's not a replacement for actually doing studies with users with visual impairments, but at least it'll give you a good idea of what it is to live with a visual impairment. So, and I'm going to be presenting that at a conference called TAI at Stanford in January. And I did a little demo of this tool as well at the Assets Conference. And for the demo, I just used the Google Cardboard solution, which is a little simpler and a little more portable, because the Oculus Rift, you know, you have to tether it to a computer with a bunch of cables and stuff like that. So it takes a little time to set up, where the cardboard version you can just, like, you know, put immediately in front of your eyes. And but the cardboard version doesn't support stereo vision. So
to address the two problems where the vision plays an important role in controlling a person's posture, because blind people tend to have poor balancing skills, and where kids with visual impairments often express delays in motor development due to having predominantly sedentary behaviors, you've developed VISCI. It's an exercise game to improve the balance in children who are blind. Tell me more about VISCI.
So a lot of the stuff that I've been doing with exercise games, I've worked with Lauren Lieberman. She is a professor at SUNY Brockport, State University Brockport, and she's an expert in adapted physical education. She's also the founder of Camp Abilities. It's a sports camp for blind kids that is held every year, and it's actually held in a number of states. I think this year is going to be the 14th or 15th time she's organizing it. And so I've been going there, and it's a great experience to, you know, work with kids. And a couple of years ago, I got really interested in, you know, childhood obesity, because, you know, there's a lot of media attention with childhood obesity. And I did a little research on that, and I found out that, you know, kids with visual impairments have much higher levels of obesity, and it's, you know, they don't have the same opportunities to be physically active as sighted kids. You know, sighted kids can just run around. Blind kids, you know, it's a lot more dangerous. You know, you can get seriously injured, and so blind kids have much higher levels of obesity, and, you know, they're sitting down more, so they there's all sorts of health problems. I'm not, like, a specialist in that area, but there's been various studies that have shown that. And so I was like, you know, when everybody's doing research on how to get kids more active, I was like, well, why don't we try to find better ways to get blind kids more active? And, you know, being really into video games, back then, there was, like, a new type of video game called exercise games. which is a game where you basically use physical activity as input. And Nintendo Wii kind of like pioneered that. So there were like all sorts of games with tennis and bowling and, you know, jumping around. And I immediately saw the potential for those kind of games for blind kids because, you know, you don't have to run around. You basically exercise them in place, so the risk of injury is minimal. You don't depend on anyone because you can play against a friend online or you can play against a computer. A lot of the physical activities for blind kids, if you want to go out for a run or something, they have to use a sighted guide. So you don't have this dependency on other people. So I immediately saw, like, hey, you know, exercise games, this could be really, you know, could be a really great technology for blind kids. But, you know, because those games kind of all rely on visual feedback, they're not accessible. So I got out and looked at, okay, how can we get blind kids to play these games, but then, you know, using audio or haptic feedback. So we developed a number of games, and we explored new ways of, you know, conveying information using haptic and audio information. So we built like a tennis game and a bowling game and some sort of whack-a-mole game. And then 2 years ago, we were like, well, let's look at balance because, you know, the Nintendo Wii also came up with this balance board and, you know, get kids to, you know, improve their balance. So we developed this game called V-Ski, you know, being in the Sierras. We were like, well, let's build a new game. Let's build a game for skiing. And kids have to lean to the left and to the right, and then in between, so they have to kind of like go through these gates, and they either have to go to the left or right. And we did some tests to see if, you know, their balancing skills would improve. And I think we had kids play over like 2 or 3 days, and then during the third day, they did a lot better than the first day. So we kind of measured also their center of balance, and it had, you know, although some kids had played the game for 5 or 6 times, there was a small improvement in balancing skills. So it kind of demonstrates the, you know, the feasibility of such games to solve, you know, balancing skills problems.
You got a $150,000 grant from Reader's Digest Partners for Sight Foundation to research and develop an indoor navigation mobile app called Navitar. Tell us more about Navitar and its benefits for the blind.
So we have this indoor navigation system called Navitar that we developed, and you know, it's cheaper to implement than some of the existing solutions. And you don't have to wear any expensive sensors. You don't have to put tags in your environments like RFIDs or Bluetooth. The only thing you need is a map of the environment. And, you know, those maps are becoming increasingly available. So Google Maps already has a bunch of those maps. And a lot of universities have maps already available for their buildings. So we're, the Partners for Sight Foundation gave us some money to help us make Navitar available. What we want to do is make Navitar available for free as a smartphone app. And in order to do that, we need to create more maps that can work with Navitar. So I have a team of students now working very hard on trying to find the best way of creating those maps at a large scale. And now being at Google, you know, really gave me a very good insight in what information Google currently already has and whether we can use that. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out whether we can use some of those Google Maps. And for now, we're kind of focusing on the University of Nevada because we have maps available for our campus. So we're trying to come up with an approach where we can very rapidly create those maps. And we're still, you know, developing Navitar as well, like improving it and making the step counting be better and the interaction better. So we're, yeah, hopefully, we're planning something like maybe the summer of next year that we have the Android app available in the Android App Store, and that it will work for, you know, hopefully the University of Nevada. But then, you know, we have the software to create maps at a large scale, and then hopefully other universities will become interested. And we're kind of focusing for now kind of like on universities because, I mean, I have a blind student myself who was a PhD student, and he had, when he came here, he had a very hard time, you know, finding his way on campus, and, you know, we had all sorts of mobility instructors help him find his way, but, you know, it was a very practical problem. So, I'm hoping we can make campuses more accessible to blind students and, you know, increase their participation in higher education, because there's also various data that shows that a lot of blind kids don't go to pursue college degrees. Not sure if that's mobility related or not, but I mean, if we can find a way to help them around campus better, you know, I can imagine that, you know, they may become more interested in pursuing a graduate or a college degree. So yeah, it's a kind of something that, you know, I'm trying to help my own student, and have him, he helps us out, gives us feedback, and the grant is very welcome, and I want to make one of the things I always found very problematic is that a lot of the assistive technology for blind people is so expensive. Like screen readers sometimes cost thousands of dollars. Braille displays, they're $3,000-$4,000. That's a lot of money, and a lot of blind people don't have jobs. So it's my kind of goal to kind of figure out solutions where we're trying to make assistive technology available for free. And because I got a grant from the National Science Foundation a couple years ago with the Exo Gaming Project, I was like, well, we're going to make all of our Exo games available for free. And you can actually download our games at our website, vifit.org. And I think as to date, we have something like 20,000 or 25,000 downloads. And I got emails all over the world from parents, and we got teachers, even from schools that are blind here in the U.S., their physical education teachers are using some of our games. And 2 years ago, I got an email somewhere from Qatar, and there was a school of the blind there who, they found our games online, and their kids were all playing our games. So, that's just so rewarding, and I really feel like a lot of the research in assistive technology, people come up with all sorts of really fancy solutions, but then, it costs $20,000 to produce, and then in the end, no one is going to use it. And in my research, we're using low-cost technology like Nintendo Wii. The controller is only $10. So, and then you get 25,000 people download your game. So I feel like that has a much bigger impact. I'd rather do something that is, maybe not as fancy or as precise, but, at least you get 25,000 people to play it, right? I think that's a much better, has a much bigger impact on people, I think.
How can our listeners learn more about you and all of the new technologies that you're researching for the blind?
So I got a website. It's my first name, .com, so it's one of the benefits of having a weird name. So my name is Ilke, E-E-L-K-E, and if you go to E-E-L-K-E.com, there's a website that has all my research. It's the website is screen reader accessible. I made sure it is screen reader accessible, otherwise, there's a bunch of projects. So we have the exercise games that are available on vifit.org. The SimVis project is available. Navatar has its own website, which you can find. It's navatar-app.com. So you can go to these websites and you can find them. We try to update our websites regularly with news, and all the publications you can find on my website as well. If you're interested in the scientific details and the results of user studies.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thanks for the opportunity to let me talk about my research.
And it's been a pleasure having you, Dr. Fulmer.
Yes.
We hope that the new technology benefits the blind in the near future. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
To learn more about Dr. Ilke Fulmer and his projects, go to his website at eelke.com, or you can email him at eelke.fulmer@gmail.com, and you can also like him on Facebook. Just type in his name.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode and past and future shows too. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Hi, this is Rick Morin, the co-host of The Yin Yang Show, along with my good friend Brian Charlson. The Yin Yang Show can be heard every Thursday here on ACB Radio Interactive. For those of you in Boston like we are, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday evening. Now, what do we do in The Yin Yang Show? Well, we play music, and the songs that we play in yin yang pairs. When we play a yin, the song will have a certain word in the title or a certain meaning, and then the yang will have an opposite word or an opposite meaning, we want you to be a big part of the show also. You'll get to make requests and complete our yin-yang pairs. You could even call us and we'll put you on the air. So tell you what, why don't you tune in Thursday from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and before long, you'll get the yang of it.